It's the web's only podcast completely devoted to daily fantasy sports. Welcome to the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. Here's your host, Dan Bach.
Hey everyone, what is going on? I want to welcome you to the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix, all presented by Daily Joust, the daily podcast completely devoted and focused on the daily fantasy sports industry. We bring you the top interviews, we bring you the game analysis, and all the information surrounding this industry. So thank you so much for giving us a listen. Today on the podcast, lots of stuff to talk about as usual. We will go over all the games tonight. There are a whole bunch of them, so we won't waste too much time before we get to that. Also discuss some of the stuff going on tonight in the industry. There's a lot of it. And it's been about a week or so since we busted out a box beef, so I went to the Players' Championship yesterday, and I'll give you a couple of thoughts that I had when I was at that golf tournament out here in Jacksonville. So let's kick it off, though, talking about what we have going on industry-wise. And today we've got like $2,000 worth of free rolls in the daily fantasy sports industry. So if you're somebody who doesn't have a big bankroll, maybe you're tight with your money, maybe you just don't have a lot of money, extra money to spend, well, you can't really say these daily sites aren't giving you a chance to play for next to nothing, for nothing, and walk away with some cash. And that's exactly what's happening. The big one, though, tonight is over on Fantasy Feud. You've got a $1,000 free roll over there. I think the password is Spring Baseball, and $1,000 on the line. Can't beat that. Also, Profanity Sports running a grinders-only free roll. So for all this information, we've really made it nice and easy for you on Roto Grinders. We've got a tab at the very top of our page that's going to list all of the free rolls we have, some which are available for anybody, and other ones which are exclusive to Roto Grinders members or incentives members, but you can go there and check them out. I think Joust and FanDuel also have some free rolls on Friday, so just tons of stuff going on from a free perspective. So I know a lot of the people who listen to the podcast might play for some big money, but there's lots of newbies out there as well. This is a great way to kind of get into the industry and try to take down one of these big tournaments, because let's face it, there's probably going to be a good chunk of people in most of these free rolls, and if you can win those, let's face it, then you should be able to win the stuff with the real money on the line. So wanted to throw that out there for you today. Also, big night over on FanDuel, because we've got not one but two different people who are going to probably qualify for the Daily Fantasy Baseball Championship. Of course, you've got their regular tournament, $10 entry, and every Friday they've been running this tournament. But last Friday, of course, we had the five-man tie atop the championship qualifier. So those five guys will play it off today, and certainly pulling for one of the three Roto Grinders members. We've got Burn Notice, we've got Beer Makers Fan, and we've got Bone Steel. Those are the three guys who represent Roto Grinders. So love to see one of those three make it to the finals and go out to Vegas for a chance to win $100,000. And again, like I say, anybody can get in. Of course, the big field event as well tonight. So I usually put in about two or three teams and take a shot there. Team stacking has been in a way that's won the last couple weeks. The first couple of weeks didn't seem to necessarily work out that way. Obviously, if a team scores like 18 runs, like the Rockies did not long ago, I think the team stack is obviously going to pay its way off, but I don't think it's the only way to go. But again, anytime you've got to beat 1,800 people, you're going to have a little luck on your side. So best of luck in that. Also, Draft Street, if you haven't gotten in yet, probably too late. $50 qualifying tournament for their Draft Street Baseball Championship. They've already had a handful of people already qualify. So if you want to get a chance to get into their big championship, $35,000 going to the winner there, and just a ton, what is it, $200,000 in total payouts in that tournament. So make sure you go over to Draft Street, and they've run qualifiers and satellite tournaments all the time. So it's not really a once-a-week type thing for them, but they do usually run one on Friday night. So that's kind of what we got going in the industry, but with all these games going on in the fantasy games, then, well, you know, in the fantasy industry, you need me. Well, you don't need me, but I'm going to give you some advice. Let's go break down some analysis of these MLB games for Friday night.
Relax. All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Just Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist. Throw some ground ball. More democratic.
Okay, full schedule. Let's not dawdle. Let's get right to it. Tampa Bay and Baltimore. Helixson versus Evelyn. Jeremy Helixson allowed 5 runs, 10 hits, 2 homers, and 8 walks in 10 and 2/3 innings last year in his starts in Baltimore. But he was actually really good against them at home. I mean, absolutely dominated them. So kind of tough to say what direction he's going to be in, but he hasn't been a great starter this year, not nearly as good as he was last year. One guy for Baltimore who's pretty good against Helixson is Adam Jones, 5 for 13, a double and a homer against Helixson in his career. Dana Evelyn hasn't pitched against the Rays since 2009, so some of those stats a little bit skewed. But the one guy always to consider in the Baltimore-Tampa matchup is B.J. Upton. He absolutely crushes ball in Camden Yards. Over the past 3 years, more home runs there than in any other park. So highly consider B.J. tonight for the Rays. Seattle takes on the New York Yankees. It's King Felix versus Hiroki Kuroda. Felix Hernandez allowed only 2 runs or fewer in 6 of his 7 starts this season, and he's given up 2 runs, 15 hits, and struck out 32 over 31 innings while going 2-0 in his last 4 starts. He's clearly one of the best pitchers in the American League and usually does pretty well in the Bronx. 4-1, an ERA under 2 in his career against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. Seattle, they've actually lost 6 straight on the road, not playing very well, but a couple of guys to consider maybe for the Yankees if you want to go against Hernandez today, which I don't necessarily recommend doing. But Robinson Cano batting 375, 2 home runs in his last 8 games. Also batting 355 with a couple of home runs and 31 career at-bats against Hernandez. He's one guy I might consider because he started off slow. I think his numbers are going to rebound here. Mark Teixeira also batting over 300 with 5 home runs against Felix in his career. And Nick Swisher, 4 home runs and 42 at-bats against Hernandez. As for Hiroki Kuroda, a bit inconsistent, but he's been pretty solid at Yankee Stadium this year. And with Seattle not having the most impressive offense in the American League, I think he's a possible play tonight. Miguel Olivo, the one guy with any sort of batter versus pitcher stats, 5 for 12 against Hiroki Kuroda. Houston and Pittsburgh, Norris against McDonald, and James McDonald has been backed by two or fewer runs in 5 of his 6 starts, but he's yet to allow more than 3 runs in any of his outings. His basically, improvement from last year to this year has been terrific, and Astro hitters are only hitting 195 with 7 runs in losing 3 of the 4 games against him. McDonald is 2-1 with a 2.48 ERA and 5 career starts against Houston. Bud Norris coming off a good start against St. Louis, who he usually pitches well against. 3-4 with a 4.04 ERA and 8 starts against the Pirates, but only 1-3 with an ERA over 5 in PNC Park. Andrew McCutchen batting better, 327, 12 RBIs in a 15 home games against the Astros. Neil Walker also 8 for 18 with a homer. And if you want to go on a cheap option at catcher, Mike McHenry, 5 for 9 against Bud Norris. So if he's in the lineup for Pittsburgh, you might want to consider him. Next guy to take a look at in San Diego and Philadelphia, it's Clayton Richard versus Vance Worley. Worley last start versus San Diego was stellar. 7 innings, struck out a career-high 11, allowed no runs in that 2-0 win. But he is coming off a 5-run, 11-hit game against Washington in his last start, though, so that does kind of worry me a little bit. The Padres are batting 220, which is last in the National League as a team, and they've actually scored 2 runs or less 15 times this year. That's about half of the games they've played. As for Clayton Richard, he's gotten 2 runs of support in 20 and a third innings in his last 3 starts, so that's not very good. And Richard, though, has lost both of his career starts against Philadelphia, despite an ERA under 3, just not getting any run support whatsoever. Hunter Pence is the only guy with much luck against Richard, only 2 for 3. Stay away from Jimmy Rollins. He looks old, only batting 1 for 7 against Clayton Richard. Moving on to back to the American League, it's Cleveland and Boston. Ubaldo Jimenez against Clay Buchholz. The Boston rotation is just beyond awful right now. An ERA of 6 on the season, an 11 ERA over their 6-game losing streak for the starters, and they have not actually lost 7 straight games in Fenway since 1994. Jeez, where were you in 94? What was it, in high school back then, I think? Buchholz owns the highest ERA and the highest opponent batting average among major league pitchers who are qualified, with a .343 batting average against. Ouch. He's also allowed 5 runs or more in all 6 of his starts, so don't take him today. Asdrubal Cabrera, maybe one guy to consider, 2-for-3 with a homer against Buchholz. But honestly, most of the Indians hitters, they're not great, but this matchup looks pretty good for them. Ubaldo, he is 5.74 ERA in his 3 starts away from home, while allowing hitters to hit .338 against him. So he's not the same pitcher at home as he is on the road. So I think you can go with some Boston Red Sox hitters in this one. Adrian Gonzalez, though, maybe not him. 154, 11 strikeouts in his lifetime against Jimenez. Moving on to New York and Miami. This is the Mets versus, of course, the Marlins. The Mets have won 5 straight. They're playing some great baseball. But the one guy who is really happy for this matchup has got to be Carlos Santana. He has posted a 1.83 ERA in his last 3 starts. And all those were Mets wins, but you combine that with a 6-1 record, ERA of about 1.5 in 10 starts against the Miami Marlins, or Florida Marlins. Now, he hasn't faced them in 2 years, so some of those numbers might be skewed, but overall, Santana's had their number. One guy, though, at first base who could be a nice cheap option for you, though, is Gabby Sanchez with the Fish, 5-for-8 against Santana in his career. As for Mark Burley, who's on the mound for Miami, he's pitched well in his first career start against the Mets, gave up 2 runs, basically on a David Wright homer, but that was basically the brunt of his loss, and more or less pitched pretty well against San Diego his last time out. So not my favorite guy to go with, but Burley on any given day can really have solid stuff. Washington-Cincinnati, Gio Gonzalez against Mike Leake. Washington, they got the best staff in baseball right now. ERA of about 2.64, rotation sitting at about 2.24, and a batting average against below 200. Now, this lefty has allowed 2 or fewer runs in each of his last 5 starts. A little bit more rough on the road, 3.45 ERA in his 3 starts on the road this season. That does worry me, but Cincinnati has not really hit him all that well. They're picking up the pace, though, the Reds. They've won 5 out of their last 7 games. Jay Bruce obviously playing great, but a little bit tougher versus a left-handed pitcher here today, so I don't know if I go that route. Joey Votto, .333 batting average, 5 doubles in the last 7 games. As for Mike Leake, he's not very good, 0-4, an ERA of almost 6 this season, but done all right against the Nationals, 3-1, 3.86 ERA. Adam LaRoche, 6-for-17 with 6 ribbies in the last month. In last month's series against the Reds, and he's also entering hitting .400 with 4 homers while driving in 8 runs during their last 10 contests between these two teams. Zimmerman 4-for-12 with a homer off of Leake. Also Ian Desmond 5-for-14. Moving on to the American League, Los Angeles and Texas. Should be a fun one. It's C.J. Wilson against Yu Darvish. Darvish 4-1, ERA under 3. Wilson 4-2 with an ERA under 3 himself. Kind of a battle of Texas's old number one starter versus their new number one starter. And as much as I love the matchup, I just don't know where to go from a fantasy perspective on this one. Darvish, he's been really good. 1.46 ERA over his last 37 innings, getting a lot of strikeouts. But he's getting up there in price, and with this game out there in Texas, smaller ballpark, I'm not super confident in him. Same with C.J. Wilson. You know, L.A. hasn't been playing great, but overall, he's been fairly decent this year. But anytime you go against Texas's lineup, I'm a little bit leery. So I'm probably going to stay away from most of the players in this game, which is unusual because a lot of guys who you might normally like. I mean, even a guy like Mike Trout came into his own in the last game. But all in all, probably stay away. Maybe Adrian Beltre, .368 batting average and a homer against C.J. Wilson in his career. But overall, not overly interested in this one. Toronto and Minnesota, they're going to face off tonight. Kyle Drabek versus Nick Blackburn. And both starters looking to avoid a 4-game losing streak. So Toronto will try to pick up their 6th straight victory at Target Field. The Blue Jays also have won 13 of 15 at Minnesota since 2008 and have outscored the Twins 53-19 while going 7-1 all-time at Target Field. The Blue Jays, Blackburn, he's 1-1 with a 2.33 ERA in his 4 career starts against Toronto, but there's some numbers here not in his favor. Mainly some good home run numbers. Adam Lind, J.P. Arencibia, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, all those guys have a homer against Blackburn in less than 10 at-bats. And Yanel Escobar, hitting well, 11 for 21 in his last five games at Minnesota. And Edwin Encarnacion, batting .414 with five homers, 12 ribbies in Toronto's eight contests at Target Field. One guy playing well for Minnesota hitting the ball is Josh Willingham, homered in each of the last two games, 5 for 10, 3 RBIs in his last three, but then again, he's Josh Willingham. Not much excitement taking him as a daily fantasy player. Kansas City, Chicago, Paulino against Floyd. The White Sox go for a third straight victory when they take on Kansas City on Friday night. Adam Dunn, he's batting pretty well. .385, three home runs and five ribbies in his last four games. He's only one home run shy of last year's total for the season. So Adam Dunn getting it done. He's also, believe it or not, one game shy of becoming the second player since 1921 to strike out in 37 straight games. So we'll hold our breath for that one. He is 2-for-8 with a homer off of Paulino. Paul Konerko, think he's a good play tonight. 3-for-6 with a homer off of Paulino. As for Gavin Floyd, posted a 1.71 ERA in his last three starts, struck out 21, walked 3. And he's done pretty well against Kansas City, ERA under 3 in his last four starts. Eric Hosmer, been awful, batting .111 in his past 11 games, hitting a big sophomore slump, but did do well against Chicago last season, hit .344 with three homers in their series. Johnny Giovitella, he was just called up from the minors. He had .421 in five games against Chicago last season. Could be a cheap option there. And Jeff Francoeur, 5-for-9 with a home run against Gavin Floyd. Alex Gordon, 5-for-15, two home runs against Gavin Floyd. Chris Getz, 4-for-9 so far in his career against him. So decent batter versus pitcher numbers in that game. Chicago against Milwaukee, Garza against Wolf. Brewers have won 8 straight versus the Cubs in Miller Park. And Matt Garza, though, was great against the Brewers on April 12th, coming out one out shy of a three-hitter in a 8-0 victory. Garza has won his last three starts versus Milwaukee as an ERA under 2 and actually struck out 22 batters in those games. Nigel Morgan, one guy who's done well, 6-for-13 with a triple against Garza. But since joining the Brewers, Randy Wolf is only 1-4, 4.23 ERA and 6 starts against the Cubs. Alfonso Soriano homered twice off of Wolf in 35 at-bats. Hasn't had one yet in 2012. He's going to get one sooner or later. Might happen today. Also, got to think that Mr. Castro is a good option at shortstop today. 7-for-19 against Wolf, and he absolutely kills left-handed pitcher. And if you look at a cheap catcher option, Giovanni Soto, 10-for-30, three home runs against Randy Wolf. There you have it. Atlanta, St. Louis, it's Mike Minor going against Jaime Garcia. The Cardinals are going for a fifth straight victory and eighth in a row at home, averaging 7.5 runs during their winning streak. Mike Minor's given up 7 and 9 runs in each of the last two games, so I'm definitely not going to go that route today. Carlos Beltran, 2-for-4, a couple of doubles. Matt Holliday, 2-for-3 with a homer all against Minor. And Lance Bergman may return in this game as well. As for Atlanta, they only scored 2 runs in 3 games versus Chicago. Garcia has done well, 2-0 versus an ERA under 3 in his 3 starts versus Atlanta. Freddie Freeman was red hot against Colorado, but he went 1-for-9 in Chicago, but 2-for-3 with a homer against Garcia in his career. Look to Martin Prado as well, hitting .390 off of lefties. Good play today. Also like Michael Bourne, 4-for-8. Against Garcia in his career. And Matt Diaz, not a bad starter anytime a lefty is on the mound, and he's likely to be in that lineup. San Francisco, Arizona, it's Bumgarner against Patrick Corbin. Arizona's won 8 straight games in the series, but actually lost 5 overall, so they're not playing great. I think Bumgarner will turn it around. He has won 5 straight starts, has a 1.25 ERA over his last 3. His lone defeat came against Arizona on April 7th, where he allowed 4 runs in 4 innings and surrendered a couple of home runs to Aaron Hill. Justin Upton, also 7-for-10 with a double and a home run in this head-to-head matchup. Only the third career start, first at home for Corbin. San Francisco, again, I'm not in love with their hitters right now, so maybe a Buster Posey at the catcher position you might want to consider. Colorado, L.A., Moyer versus Capuano. Chris Capuano, believe it or not, has 18 and two-thirds scoreless inning streak going on right now for the Dodgers. 1.42 ERA in winning all three of his home starts. The question is, will it last? I doubt it will. Not necessarily that this is the game is going to turn around, although a lot of numbers point to that it will be. All in all, I just don't trust him because there's no history of this sort of track record. He's 0-2 with a 6.57 ERA in his two matchups against the Rockies last year. And let's face it, guys like Cargo, 5-11, 3 homers, 7 RBIs versus the Dodgers this year. 509 batting average, 6 homers, 19 ribbies, and a 14-game hitting streak against L.A. You got to put him in your lineup. Troy Tulowitzki, 5-8, 2 solo homers, 3 walks. Kadir, a couple of doubles. Ramon Hernandez, a couple of doubles. So lots of success against Chris Capuano in this game by Rockies hitters. Jamie Moyer, 0-2 with an ERA of over 10 in 3 starts versus the Dodgers, and that's since his last win, which was back in 2000. I'm pretty sure I was on a college campus going to keggers back in 2000. But believe it or not, I think I read that Don Mattingly has more at-bats against Jamie Moyer than most of his team. That's how old this guy is. Matt Kemp, 3-7 in his career against Moyer. Kemp has gone a season-high 8 straight games without a home run. Wouldn't be shocked if that changed tonight. Andre Ethier, 1-8 against Moyer in his career. Last game to discuss this Friday night, Detroit and Oakland, Porcello against Tom Malone of Oakland, and Miguel Cabrera, Andy Dierks, each had 4 hits. Tigers scored their most runs since a 13-12, 11-inning win against Boston back in early April. Cabrera's batting 344, 32 RBIs in 35 career games against Oakland. Andy Dierks is red hot right now, batting close to 600 with 2 home runs and 6 RBIs in his last 5 games. Tom Malone, he was 3-1 with an ERA of 2 before he allowed 13 runs in 9 2/3 innings while splitting his last 2 outings. And that's what I'm talking about. So many times, no-name pitchers get off to good starts, but put it in perspective. It's all going to catch up eventually. You just have to pick the spots. Porcello tries for a 3rd straight victory on Friday. He's allowed 1 homer among 4 hits and a 6 1/3 innings win over Chicago on Sunday. After giving up 14 runs, though, in 7 2/3 innings and consecutive losses to Texas and Seattle, we'll see which Rick Porcello we get tonight. He's 2-4 with an ERA of about 4.4 in 7 starts against the A's, including 0-3 with a 5.56 ERA in 4 games at Oakland. Brandon Inge has been hot since he was picked up by the A's, 5-15, 3 homers, 12 RBIs in his last 4 games overall. So that's the rundown of Major League Baseball on Friday night. Great, or best of luck in all your matchups. So you ready for the $1,000 guaranteed tournament over there on Daily Joust? Well, you should be. They're the great sponsor of this podcast, and we want to thank them for that. And Primetime 420 is the bounty is on him this week in this tournament. It's impossible for him to fare much worse than I did last week. So if you happen to beat him, you win yourself an extra little badge there on Daily Joust, and that'll go towards your free roll tournament. You get 5 badges, you're in that monthly free roll. And of course, they've got King Richard tournaments. They're very popular. They've got Super Joust seats attached to them, and those are basically 50-50 games that span over multiple days. You start off at 32, then 16, then 8, then 4, then 2, and then you get your champion. So it's a nice little fun tournament. $20 entry on that, so not overly expensive, not going to kill your budget. Also, make sure you check out their solo contest, play in those, because the solo survivor tournaments, they start up, and you got to be a winner of a solo contest within the last 7 days to be eligible for that. And if there's a day where you really like some of the salaries, you really like the pitcher that's on the mound, that 60-point mark is really not impossible to hit. It's actually, I think, a fairly achievable goal. So definitely take a look at them. They are a fine sponsor of this podcast. We thank them for that. They are DailyJoust.com.
Now, with his observations from the outrageous to absolutely absurd.
All I get, all day, is people complaining to me.
It's Box Beef.
Okay, gonna wrap up the show with a box beef. This is where I kind of rant about random things going on in my life, in the world of sports, other things like that. And today's beef is with the old golf tournament. That's right. I live out in Jacksonville, Florida. We're the home of the Players Championship, I should say, not the Tour Championship, over there at TPC Sawgrass. So I grabbed my little two-year-old, brought him over to the golf course yesterday morning for the tournament. First off, golf courses and three-year-olds really don't mix all that well, especially when they need to be quiet and not move around. But all in all, the little guy did okay. It was a hot day, and again, not anything I necessarily recommend for most people, but hell, it was free, so what the heck. But the one thing I do want to kind of rant about, and the thing that drives me nuts, and to be honest with you, I may have already done a beef about this once already, because pretty much any time I have a radio show, I talk about it because it bothers me, are people who wear their golf shoes to golf events. And sure enough, there was a handful of them. Just because you're going to a golf event doesn't mean you should wear golf shoes. Because let's face it, they're not the most comfortable thing to wear around all day. And do you think you really need to get your grip while you watch Tiger Woods make his putt? I mean, you want to make sure you're not slipping and sliding around. I mean, it's just so annoying to see people, you know, sitting on the bumper of their cars, putting on their golf shoes, like, you know, suddenly Rory McIlroy is going to ask you to come out and hit that lob wedge for him on 17. Like, come on, give me a break. So next time you go to a golf tournament, don't wear golf shoes. There's no good reason for it. I haven't figured it out. Now, the people who are most guilty of it are the uppity-ups at the Masters. You know, whenever I see people at the Masters on TV, because I've never gone, you can always tell like 90% of them wear golf shoes. Now, the players, there wasn't quite nearly as many, but nonetheless, anybody who wears golf shoes who's not a golfer, you shouldn't do it. If the caddies aren't doing it, why the hell would you do it? So there you go. That's box beef number one. Next thing I need to do is get on some of the marshals out there because, you know, these guys, most of them are like in their 60s and 70s, and they just want to play tough guy. If somebody wants to take a cell phone picture from like 200 yards away or 100 yards away from the action, let them. You know, this is outdoors. There's no flash. Cell phones don't make noises when they take pictures. What's the big deal? Why do you have to act like a tough guy and act like Tiger Woods' old caddy who got up in a huff all the time people took pictures? Jeez, it's like they're one moment in glory. It's like they look at themselves and say, this is my last time for me to be tough. And all these guys, you know, they're all volunteers, and it's just like a thankless job. I don't know why you'd want to be a marshal at a golf tournament, because A, you can't really watch the golf, because when it's time to hit, you got to turn around and hold your hands up and make sure everybody stands still, and God forbid somebody moves around or takes out their cell phone, you got to act like a tough guy. But you're like 70 years old. Give me a break, you know? Go get your shaded chair and sit on the 18th hole and watch people go through. And I'm not trying to be hateful to older people, because you know what? I'm going to be there one day too. But I'll tell you one thing I'm not going to do is trudge around in 90-degree weather and try to act like tough guys to teenagers who want to take pictures on their cell phone. I'm not going to do that. But I guess somebody has to. So we'll see what the world of marshals looks like years from now, because I just one of those things kind of bothers me. I want to act like a tough guy. And no, I did not get scolded for taking a cell phone picture. I just want to let that be known. But that's going to wrap up the show for today. I will return tomorrow. Actually, I won't return tomorrow. I'll return on Monday, because I get the weekends off to kind of relax, take in some of the games. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at RotoGrinders. Go to our iTunes page and subscribe to us right there. And any feedback you may have, please send me an email, dan@rotogrinders.com. Till tomorrow, or till Monday, everyone. Jeez, like I want to work tomorrow. Till Monday, have yourself a great weekend, and we'll talk to you then. See you, folks.